Gummer Joe with Bamberg. This is BeerPod.com, the week in Georgia in English, coming to you from the beer capital of Bavaria. Today is Thursday, the 23rd of July, 2015. On this date, in 1903, the Ford Motor Company sells its first car. 1914, after the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand, Austria-Hungary issues an ultimatum to Serbia that it knew wouldn't be accepted in order to provoke a war that Germany wanted. 1926, Fox Films buys the patents to Movietone sound system for recording sound onto film. 1929, the fascist government of Italy bans the use of foreign words. 1936, the Unified Socialist Party of Catalonia is founded through a merger of the Socialist and Communist parties. 1940, the U.S. issues a declaration on the U.S. non-recognition policy of the Soviet annexation and incorporation of the three Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. 1942, the Treblinka extermination camp is opened. 1952, in Egypt, the Society of Free Officers takes power. The corrupt King Farouk is forced to abdicate and relinquish power to General Mohammed Naguib, the figurehead leader of the coup, who was later superseded by Colonel Gamal Abdel Nasser. On that same day in 1952, the precursor of the European Union, the European Coal and Steel Community, is established. Note that the EU started with a common energy policy. Let's hope that continues. 1961, the Sandinista Liberation Front is founded in Nicaragua. 1974, the Greek military junta collapses. Former Prime Minister Konstantinos Karamanlis is invited to lead the new government. 1982, the International Whaling Commission decides to end commercial whaling by 1986. 1988, General Ne Win, effective ruler of Burma since 1962, resigns after pro-democracy protests. 1992, Abkhazia declares independence from Georgia. 1993, Agdam was occupied by Armenian separatists. Birthdays are George Machiavelli of perfume fame, Raymond Chandler, Haile Selassie, Najib Razak, Prime Minister of Malaysia, Woody Harrelson, Annie Sprinkle, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Monica Lewinsky. Ulysses S. Grant and Eddie Rickenbacker died on this date, as did 4 years ago Amy Winehouse. Today is National Hot Dog Day. Now listen, listeners. Last week I read this out, and I quote, "In 1348, King Pancho XIV of Finland leads his troops to victory against the Ruthenians at the Battle of Quankatopolis, fought in modern-day Andorra." King Pancho of Finland, Ruthenians in Andorra, Quankatopolis. All right, you got to work with me on this here. I don't want to be sprinkling this thing with decoys to find out if you're paying attention, but you people are going to have to tune in a little bit better. Bueller, 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 Bueller. Anyone? Anyone? So just shape up or this will go on your permanent record. I'm your host, Mark Mullen. As ever, the podcast was written by Ari Swiecka. My Georgian Journal and Fides Politer column this week is about the two sides in Georgian politics, except how there are actually more sides than that. Remember, you can ask questions. Just post them to our forum or send them by email to tpeelpod@gmail.com. Like, for example, who are the Ruthenians? Because I can tell you, there are not a lot of them hanging around Andorra. Following up on the Russian troops installing new border markers in South Ossetia further into Georgian territory, on the 17th of July, the Interior Ministry set up roadblocks and restricted people from entering the villages of Orchosani and Tsilulbani, except for locals. Locals complained that after the incident last week where journalists and activists took down one of the new border posts, the Russian troops have not given them access to their agricultural lands on the other side. After the police roadblocks went up, people from youth organization The Free Zone attempted to hold a rally at the border, which caused a confrontation with police. More words in condemnation of Russia and in support of Georgia have come in from UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, from the European People's Party, from the President of the Council of Europe's Congress, from Romania, Japan, and the Czech Republic. On the 19th of July, Defense Minister Tinico Hidashelli commented on the new border markers, saying that it is part of Russia's provocations through which it is testing our patience. Evening of Saturday, the 18th of July, there was a Stop Russia protest in the center of Tbilisi against Russia's creeping occupation and the Georgian authorities' policies towards Moscow. A few thousand people gathered outside the government building for the demonstration. People had Georgian flags, Ukrainian flags, signs saying where Putin can go. Protesters were saying that instead of countering Georgia's soft and hard power against Georgia, the government policies were, on the contrary, contributing to increase of Moscow's influence in the country. The rally was organized by media outlets Tabula and Rustaviori, as well as think tank Georgia's Reform Association, rights and watchdog groups Georgian Democracy Initiative, Media Development Fund, and Tolerance and Diversity Institute. Earlier in the day, in the run-up to the rally, police did not allow a truck with stage equipment to park in the protest venue and arrested one of the protest organizers. People addressing the crowd included the organizers, as well as Georgia's ambassador to the EU, 2005 to 2013, a former public defender, a dean of the business school at Free University, a journalism professor at Tbilisi State, and so on. Protesters were also calling for scrapping the Abashidze-Karasin talks, which were introduced in late 2012. Protesters were calling on Parliament to adopt a law against collaborationism. Commenting on the protest rally, Prime Minister Karabashvili said that there are many idlers, and that along with UNM and their supporters, they have nothing else to do. More tension on the border. On the 18th of July, a 53-year-old Georgian man in Kareli district was kidnapped from his garden by armed men and taken into South Ossetia. Locals from his village of Knoveli say the garden is hundreds of meters from the administrative boundary line. Following up on decoupling intelligence and security agencies from the Interior Ministry, Parliament confirmed on the 22nd of July incumbent Interior Minister Vakhtang Gomelauri as the head of the State Security Service, which will be established from the 1st of August. Gomelauri was nominated by Prime Minister Karabashvili 2 days earlier on the 20th of July. His nomination needed the support of at least 76 members of Parliament. He is now confirmed for the post for a six-year term. As a reminder, before becoming Interior Minister in late January 2015, Gomelauri served as Deputy Interior Minister since the spring 2013. Before that, he was in BI's security detail. UNM was opposed to his nomination, noting that he worked for BI and saying that it shows how the security agencies are not being depoliticized. Facing questions from parliamentarians, Gomelauri said that one of the main priorities of the new agency will be to reveal and counter the plans, intelligence abilities, and operations of foreign special services. The new body will also aim to protect persons and buildings that are exposed to high security risks in terms of state secrets, as well as prevent terrorism. He said that, quote, "We should focus on eliminating radicalism to prevent our citizens from getting involved in terrorism, and this requires preventing the spread of extremist rhetoric and ideology," end quote. Likely a reference to Pankhizi George fighting for ISIS. This also means that the post of Interior Minister is open. There's been no official nomination yet, according to reports from Parliament. Two candidates are being considered: head of the State Security Service, Anzor Chubanidze, and the Deputy Minister of Internal Affairs, Archil Talakwadze. In more new yet old appointments, former Minister of Internal Affairs, Andrei Chheidze, was appointed as Deputy Secretary for State Security and the Crisis Management Council, which is Garabashvili's response to the other council that's supposed to be dealing with these things run by the President. Secretary is former Defense Minister, Mindia Janelidze. As a reminder, Chheidze was appointed Minister of Internal Affairs in November 2013 and resigned January 2015. He is the cousin of Prime Minister Garabashvili's wife. Following up on Misha in Odessa, according to Ukrainian media, Misha is in the process of rejecting his Georgian citizenship. He was given Ukrainian citizenship in late May 2015 in connection with his appointment as governor of Odessa. This in process doesn't make sense because by Georgian law, taking Ukrainian citizenship, he automatically loses Georgian citizenship. Last week on the 17th of July, Misha announced that he appointed Maria Gaidar as a deputy governor of Odessa. 32-year-old Gaidar is a daughter of a late former acting Russian prime minister, Igor Gaidar, and very cool guy by all accounts. He's a Putin critic. She will be working on corruption, health, and social issues. A daughter of Gaidar previously worked as deputy governor of Russia's Kirov region, 2009 to 2011, and advised Moscow's deputy mayor, 2012 to 13. Misha said that he has asked Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko to grant Gaidar Ukrainian citizenship to have the post. The appointment has sparked some outrage in Russia, with people accusing her of betrayal. On the 21st of July, Misha signed a memorandum with the U.S. assuring American support in reforming Odessa. The memorandum was co-signed by William Brownfield, the Assistant Secretary of State for Drugs and Law Enforcement. It marks the first agreement between the U.S. and a regional Ukrainian government. According to Misha, the U.S. will assist in reforming customs administrative services and the provision of free legal services to volunteers. The ceremony also marked the official deployment of the new patrol police in Odessa, which were trained by the California Highway Patrol. Misha's also been active in opening up Odessa's mostly privatized beaches to the public. You can follow his Facebook for that. He's getting a lot of praise and support for the beaches thing, by the way, from what I hear. Following up on last week's story on the five largest oil retailers operating in Georgia getting fined on the 16th of July, VSOIL rejected the price-fixing allegations and said that it will use all available legal means to challenge the competition agency's decision on fining them 10 million lari. The competition agency's decision can be appealed to Tbilisi City Court. Prime Minister Ghadabashvili responded, the oil company shouldn't be anxious because the process was completely transparent. On the 17th of July, SOCAR and Sun Petroleum Georgia said that they, too, will challenge the multi-million dollar fines imposed by the competition agency. SOCAR Georgia, in which the Azerbaijani state company SOCAR holds 51% of the shares, was fined 14.4 million lari. Sun Petroleum was fined 11 million lari. Sun Petroleum is affiliated with Petrokas Energy Group. 49% of the stakes are owned by Russia's state-owned oil producer Rosneft, and the rest is controlled by businessman Dato Yakubashvili. SOCAR said that the price-fixing allegations lack legal grounds and plans to appeal in court. Sun Petrol said that the decision was completely unacceptable, that the 11 million lari fine is almost twice as much as their net profit of 6.2 million lari 2012-14, that the fine will have an extremely negative effect on the company's operations and investment plans since they were planning a 30 million lari investment. They continued that the fine runs counter to the state's declared priority of improving the business climate in the country, promoting job creation, and attracting investment. This is quite a complicated situation. I mean, in fact, there almost certainly was collusion. How they can prove it, I'm not really sure. It'll be interesting to follow the cases. But Georgia has very, very low fuel prices for non-oil producing, non-subsidized countries, relatively, and mostly because there's so little tax put on fuel. So it's a little bit strange that they'd be doing this. What it means for the economy is not particularly clear. What would be a lot smarter is if they were to lower this and tax significantly more the fuel prices and put that towards public transportation and improvement of public transport infrastructure. European Council President Donald Tusk visited Georgia this week after his initially planned visit was delayed thanks to the sparring over the Eurozone on the 20th and 21st of July. He visited then. During the visit, he praised Georgia as definitely a front runner in the EU's Eastern Partnership Program and assured that Georgia really matters a lot to us. Tusk is visiting the three South Caucasus countries. In Georgia, he met with President Margvelashvili and Parliament Speaker Dato Usubashvili, Prime Minister Ghadabashvili, and representatives of the opposition parties. On visa liberalization, he reiterated that the EU's official line that Georgia needs more efforts to meet all the criteria required to be granted short-term visa stay in Schengen area, but noted that Georgia, in fact, is really well prepared. So which is it? One thing we could do would be to let all of those people out of jail and then find out what happens in terms of visa-free travel. Tusk also commented, Tusk also commented on the Russian troops putting up a new border demarcations in South Ossetia and said that it was a provocation, that it is not a system building trust, and expressed support for Georgia's territorial integrity. He visited the area near the village Kurvaleti and Skina Lebani, where the new border signs are. He afterwards commended Georgia and said that he appreciates the government's responsible reaction to Russia's clear provocation by putting up separation infrastructure. He suggested that the goal of those provocations is to trigger a reaction, an overreaction response from Georgia, and that it is very important for us to be tough, also very responsible. Parliamentary Speaker Dato Usubashvili was in Brussels this week. On the 22nd of July, he addressed diplomats from NATO member states. In the framework of the NATO-Georgia Commission, he met with NATO Secretary General Alexander Vershbo. Vershbo commended Georgia for its considerable reforms, acknowledged good progress on the substantial NATO-Georgia package, my favorite internationally named thing. Before leaving for Brussels, Usubashvili said that he views the visit as a follow-up to his address to the NATO Parliamentary Assembly session in Budapest in May, where he said that NATO should either give Georgia a map during the next NATO summit in Warsaw in 2016, or declare that MAP is no longer a precursor to eventual full membership. Keep in mind that Dato Usubashvili is married to Tina Kochidashvili, the defense minister. President Margvelashvili had an interview on Public Broadcaster. He spoke about the Justice Ministry's proposal about reforming the prosecutor's office, saying that it should not be limited only to reviewing the rules of appointment of the chief prosecutor, but that the whole office must be depoliticized and made independent. He also talked about reforms in the law enforcement system and about changing the electoral majoritarian system, saying that these were among Georgian Dream's electoral promises. Vice Prime Minister Kaki Khaladze then responded to journalists that the government is meeting its promises, and that the president talks as if, this is a quote, the president talks as if he is not a member of his own team. Yet he owes his presidency to the team called Georgian Dream, and personally due to Bidzina Ivanishvili, who carried him through like a child during the entire election process. End quote. Kind of harsh, Kahi. The Energy and Water Supply Regulatory Commission approved to increase tariffs on electricity generated by gas-fired power plants. They're operated by three companies, G-Power, Mtukvadi Energy, and Georgian International Energy Corporation. G-Power is a subsidiary of Energo Pro Georgia, the largest electricity distributor in the country with 63% of the market share. G-Power operates 110 megawatt gas turbine power station in Gardabani. Energo Pro Georgia, which is part of a private Czech group, Energo Pro is also operates 12 hydropower plants in Georgia, and from what everybody says is actually Russian controlled. The new tariff set up by the regulator on the 22nd of July is a smaller increase than requested from the company, which is seeking higher fees to offset their rising expenses purchasing natural gas caused by the depreciation of the lari. Thermal power accounted for 19% of total electricity generated in Georgia. All three companies buy gas to operate their thermal power plants from SOCAR. The regulator authorized G-Power to increase tariffs by only 1.8% without VAT for 1 kilowatt of electricity. Tukvadi Power requested a tariff increase from 7.17 to 12.75 tetri for 1 kilowatt, but the regulatory approved only a rate of 10.87 tetri. Similar tariff increase for GIEC. Senior executive of Energo Pro Georgia said in response that without the requested tariff increase, a distributor company will not be able to secure round-the-clock supply of electricity in November-December. The Ministry of Energy has again said that there may be gas subsidies for vulnerable families. In an interview with the Voice of America's Georgian Bureau, former U.S. Ambassador to Georgia Bill Courtney, who was the ambassador when I showed up in 97, said that he thinks the U.S. Congress will start considering supplying arms not only to Ukraine but to Georgia as well. He said he thinks it won't happen very soon, but that the debates will start in a few months. He also called on Georgia to further step up security of the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline. Following up on last week's story, the Abashidze-Karasin talks, news came after the talks that Russia promised to ease visa rules for Georgian citizens. The government released a statement that the parties discussed trade, the economy, transport, humanitarian issues, including the simplifying of visa rules, and said that the Georgian party will learn the details about it in the future. Following up on the Antonelli residence, the National Security Council turned down an offer to use the residence on Antonelli Street as its office. According to the government administration, in November 2014, they asked the National Security Council to move out of the government administration office. Now in July, asked them to move into the Antonelli residence. First, the National Security Council secretary agreed, but then declined, reportedly saying that the building doesn't have the necessary requirements, so it's still unknown what government body will move in there. For those who don't know, this used to be the U.S. Embassy before the embassy tragically moved to the Northwest Territories. Before that, it was the Orbeliani Palace. Public defender Ucha Nanoashvili has asked prosecutor's office to investigate a possible crime which took place in March 2011 related to the detention and extortion of a banker. Nanoashvili says in 2011 a person with the initials LL was detained by strangers and brought to the prosecutor general's office, where he was told that if he paid 12 million lari, the bank in which he used to hold a high position would be able to continue functioning, and that if he didn't pay the fine, they would arrest him, the bank's management, and the members of the bank's fund council. Money was transferred to the state budget the next day on the 19th of March, 2011. The reason described in the receipt was paying of a fine by LL. The same day, Tbilisi City Court ruled about a plea agreement where LL was recognized as guilty in an abuse of power case. The court imposed a 12 million lari fine as punishment. Ombudsman Nanoashvili's claim is that the government officials forced LL to pay the money. Interesting to find out who that was and which bank. As a reminder, the case over the death of Prime Minister Zhivanya in 2005 is still ongoing. On the 21st of July, the prosecution announced they were considering questioning former Interior Minister Vano Medavashvili and other former officials in the case. On a similar note, the prosecutor's office has renewed an investigation into the death of former President Ziad Gamzakhourdia to see if it was premeditated murder. He died in unclear circumstances in the Samegrelo region, 31st of December 1993. Chief Prosecutor's Office said that a special fact-finding commission had been established, and they also sent a request for international legal assistance. The Interior Ministry seized more than 57 kilos of amphetamine, I don't know if that's methamphetamine, on the 21st of July. The drugs were found in a car of an Armenian man attempting to cross the border into Armenia at Sadakhlo. The day earlier, on the 20th of July, 7 kilos of cocaine was found in the luggage of a Lebanese citizen at Sarpi border crossing with Turkey. Flights are being introduced between Batumi and Aktau, Kazakhstan's main seaport on the Caspian Sea. Kazakh airline company Aviasta will begin Astana-Batumi-Aktau flights from the 31st of July. The flights will be twice a week until September. According to the Finance Ministry, a new law enters into force this week prohibiting the import of genetically modified food without customs control. The Revenue Service will control the documents of the imported genetically modified food and will determine whether it meets the labeling rules or not. Oh boy. Georgia is launching a hazelnut development program. It's being implemented by the Ministry of Agriculture through the Agricultural Cooperative Development Agency and using EU budget support. Agriculture Ministry has begun constructing facilities for hazelnut in-shell dryer and storage business in the village of Darcheli in Zugdidi Municipality. Upon completion, the business will have the capacity to dry over 24 tons and store over 500 tons of hazelnuts. It's due to be completed this August and will then be handed over to the 500-member Darcheli Hazelnut Cooperative. The cooperative will be obliged to implement global good agriculture practices by September 2008 and hazard analysis and critical control points by June 2019. Italian industrial group Salini Imprelio won a tender organized by the Korean Water Resources Corporation, a.k.a. K-Water, to build the Nenskra Dam in Upper Svaneti. The project is worth $1 billion. The Nenskra Dam will be jointly financed by the state-owned shareholding company Partnership Fund and K-Water. Salini Imprelio will start construction works at the end of this summer. The project is planned to be completed by 2021, but it will start producing electricity in 4 years. Beauty salons opened in 3 prisons as part of the Ministry of Corrections program and employ prisoners that have completed stylist courses. The idea is that they get employment and experience and certain job skills for the future crime prevention. The Ministry of Corrections has also introduced new convoy cars for prisoners as part of its new auto park project. In the auto park, there are different vehicles for different categories, such as for transporting minors, women or men, special vehicles for high-risk prisoners with a self-harm prevention mechanism, as well as new ambulances. Lots of money on cars. 3-star White Bridge Hotel will be built in Kutaisi for 2017 as part of the 3 million lari investment agreement between Georgian financial organization Capital Holding and the state-owned shareholding company Partnership Fund. Hotel will be in the city's historic center near the White Bridge and will have 40 standard and 5 luxury rooms. Capital Holding was founded in 2013 with Kazakh Investment. It says it plans to open hotel branches in 12 regions of Georgia by 2020. For the first time in 18 years, the Georgia national tennis team has been promoted to the Europe-Africa Zone 2 group of the Davis Cup. The Georgia national team included Nikolos Basilashvili, who recently made the third round at Wimbledon. President Mark Basilashvili pardoned 98 prisoners this week. The village of Dartlo in Tusheti, where I've never been but heard is very beautiful, will have restoration work on old houses that have a historical heritage status. It's part of a $600,000 project between the World Bank and the Georgian government that first started in 2012. Dartlo is located 2,000 meters above sea level. A Roman mosaic was discovered at the Gonio Castle on seaside Ajara during the archaeological works by a joint Georgian-Polish team. The mosaic supposedly dates to the rule of Roman Emperor Vespasian around 69 to 79 AD. It's a geometric pattern on the floor, likely made by Roman soldiers living at the military barracks on the site. The first such discovery in Ajara, though there are Roman mosaics in other regions. New tiers and caves were discovered at the Varzia site by researchers. There's 2 new tiers on the western slope of the cave complex, along with 10 previously unseen caves, storage facilities, ceramic dishes, and accessories dating to around the 13th century. The researchers are from a project for the preservation and development of the site initiated by Prime Minister Khadabashvili. The program received state funding. 16 members of the 51st Battalion, 5th Infantry Brigade of the Georgian Armed Forces were awarded medals and certificates of appreciation from the U.S. Defense Attaché for their contribution to the Resolute Support Mission in Afghanistan. As a reminder, the European Youth Olympics, you've seen all the little statue-y things all over the place, is opening in Tbilisi on the 26th of July. Finally, earlier this week, Haoling Group opened and presented the Olympic Village complex near Tbilisi Sea that will house the athletes. The government bought 8 of the apartment complexes, and they will be gifted to IDPs after the games. In parliamentary news, following up on previous week's stories, on the 17th of July, Parliament passed its third and final reading, the bill removing banking supervisory function from the National Bank and transferring them to a separate financial supervisory agency. According to the bill, planned financial supervisory agency will be governed by a 7-member board. The president of the National Bank and one more member of the Central Bank's board will take 2 seats. 5 other seats will be occupied by candidates nominated by the government and confirmed by Parliament. The head of the agency will be nominated by the board members and confirmed by Parliament. The bill got 80 votes for, 19 against. As a reminder, the proposal has been criticized by the international financial institutions, business associations, opposition parties, civil society organizations, and from the Central Bank itself. And President Margvelashvili indicated in late May that he would veto the bill. It takes 76 parliamentary votes to overturn a presidential veto. Co-sponsor of the bill, lawmaker Tamás Mečiaudi, who chairs the Parliamentary Committee for Finance and Budgetary Issues, said during the debate that the changes will help to increase confidence towards the central bank, that fluctuations in the lari's exchange rate will no longer depend on one man's wishes, effectively blaming the central bank's chief policies for the lari's depreciation, which is, as I have said many times before, BS. Dr. Usubashvili said that this is unlikely to happen. It's not sure whether he was right or wrong or not, and whether or not the veto will be able to be carried through, but this is pretty important in terms of banking supervision, and everybody is against it. Largely has to do with the more or less vendetta because of the closing of Kartu Bank during the campaign and everybody being ticked off at Katagiza. On the 17th of July, Parliament confirmed the amendments to the 2015 state budget, cutting economic growth forecasts from 5 to 2%, reducing the initially targeted 7.6 billion lari as tax revenues by 200 million. A funding cut, about 160 million lari, will affect most of the ministries, but the overall budgetary expenditure set for this year remains unchanged at slightly over 8 billion lari, as the government plans to offset reduced tax revenues by raising 185 million lari in foreign loans and over 40 million lari in budgetary support grants from donors. The government also expects an additional 150 million lari this year from mobile operators and licensing fees for spectrum used to provide 4G services. Part of the funds cut from the ministries will be redirected to various infrastructure projects and cover part of the damage caused by the 13th of June flood. Deputy Finance Minister Gheorghe Kakouridze said that the changes will prevent the budget deficit from increasing to 3.7% of GDP and will keep it at 3%. The initially estimated state debt of $11.8 billion is increasing to $13.8 billion, attributed mostly to the depreciation of the lari, which pushed the state debt-to-GDP ratio up to 45%, which exceeds the targeted limit of 40% set by the government's long-term economic strategy. On the 16th of July, Parliament adopted its third and final reading, the Mountain Bill. The bill envisages a broad range of benefits for residents of high mountain regions, which require at least 93 million lari of funding. Most of those benefits, such as allowances for teachers, doctors, pensioners, will go into force in 2016. Other benefits, such as partial funding for household electricity bills, will go into force in 2017. The proposal also envisages tax breaks for selected enterprises operating in mountain regions. The government proposed initial draft envisaged the introduction of most of these benefits at a later date, some of them in 2018. The dates were moved forward on the insistence of a group of majoritarian Georgian Dream lawmakers who were elected from constituencies in the mountainous areas. Not a lot of resistance was put up. They argued that these benefits were part of their pre-election campaign to constituencies, and that they should be enforced before the next parliamentary elections in October 2016, of course. According to the bill, the status of high mountain areas should be given to settlements located at least 1,500 meters above sea level in Hevi, Mtioleti, Pankizi Gorge, the mountainous parts of Ajara, Gudamakari Valley, Pshavi, Hevsureti, Tusheti, Svaneti, Lachhumi, and Racha. The government will have the right to also grant this status to settlements located a puny 800 meters above sea level, taking into consideration various conditions. Georgian citizen living for the last at least 9 months of the year in a high mountain settlement will be eligible for benefits envisaged by the bill. The Gamgevelier mayor will have the authority of granting the status of a resident of high mountain settlements. These proposals were criticized by the UNM, saying that it allows for the potential risk of corruption on who's granted special high mountain status. That's surely true. It's incredibly discretionary because it's essentially just handing out money to people up in mountains. Now, there is an issue with mountains. It's a depopulated area. The economic situation there is a little bit tough. But this is a very, very, depending on how you look at it, difficult or convenient to administer project for whoever's in power. The meme this week is some awesomely crazy stuff by Otsneba member of parliament Soso Djashvliani, who said on the 21st of July during a session, "I never go to EBRD because I'm a faithful husband." There is also stuff about a 10-ruble prostitute. The story is that UNM lawmaker had, back in May, accused some lawmakers of being absent too often from Parliament because they were attending the EBRD forum in Tbilisi, because you remember the International EBRD meeting, that's European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, was held in Tbilisi, which is a big feather in Tbilisi's cap. They're just very excited about that. Responding months later, it seems that Djashvliani confused the EBRD with the Georgian word EBRD, which is a brothel. So he thought the UNM lawmakers were accusing him of visiting a brothel and said that no, he has not visited a 10-ruble prostitute, but knows lots of Russian actresses and they're trying to break up his family and he's just a complete numbskull. And other Georgian Dream politicians were sort of yelling, trying to tell him not to embarrass himself, but it didn't work. National Geographic, so stuff to read, the National Geographic Paul Salopex out of Eden, who's like walking across the planet and very pleased with himself for doing it. He's walking across a grove, brings him to Georgia where he takes a small summer break, immediately notices on the sidewalk Georgians tend to needlessly take up lots of space that Paul himself should get since he is walking across the world for National Geographic. He muses that maybe it's because a lot of people are still used to village life, where space on the roads doesn't have to be so orderly. His tone is really deeply annoying, although I have to admit he does have some points, particularly about aliens. Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Power Vertical Podcast has a new program called Power Vertical Briefing. It comes out every Monday and hosts discussions where they're watching the Russiaverse for the upcoming week. And part of the discussion this week is how Georgian Dream government accommodation policy towards Georgia has backfired given the latest border shifts. Something of note, one of the guests is a journalist with Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Russian service. And in this discussion, he references something said by Russia's deputy foreign minister, Karasin, about the border grab, that the Russians don't have anything to do with it and that it's completely Skhinvali's move and should it be taken at face value, which it should not be because it was Russian soldiers that was doing all of this. And everybody knows that those knuckle-dragging morons in Skhinvali, who they work for. Time Out has a list of lesser-known European holiday destinations for 2015, featuring Georgia. The Calvert Journal goes to food and meat markets in the former Soviet Union, visits to Georgia. The CRRC blog this week compares what Georgians say are the ideal number of children for a family to have with how many children they actually have. Georgian Journal interviews a Georgian sculptor in the U.S. about his Tbilisi flood hippo piece. All that stuff's posted on the forum. This week's geocapital number is 1 million. That is how much Lari Ministries and Legal Entities of Public Law spent on television commercials from January to May 2015, according to Transparency International Georgia, the hardest working NGO in the Caucasus. Their information comes from state agencies and electronic platforms of state procurements. TI Georgia claims that the most expensive advertising campaign was carried out by the Ministry of Finance, which prepared a commercial about the EBRD business forum in May that cost 43,000 lari, while circulation by TV networks cost 460,000 lari. For those in London, the British Georgian Society is hosting ethnomusicologist Nino Makaradze on the 11th of August at 7 p.m. at the Georgian Embassy. There will be a presentation about Georgian women's traditional folk music, and after, Nino will teach two songs as well as dance. Please confirm with the British Georgian Society if you want to attend in Tbilisi. Starting from the 21st of July, the National Gallery will be free for 1 week to allow people to see the new Pir Osmani arrival Arsenal Hill at night. As a reminder, BI purchased it at Christie's art auction and donated it to the National Gallery. On the 5th of July at 5 p.m., Guerrilla Gardening is hosting a demonstration against the construction of Panorama Tbilisi. They'll be demonstrating outside the GDS TV studio in Sololaki. If you don't know about the Panorama plans, they are really, really frightening. I'd encourage you to find out about them and get involved. There's a bunch of organizing around this. Remember Gudiashvili. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. That is Tango, X-Ray, Tango, Bravo, Uniform, Kilo. Our email address is tbilpod@gmail.com or post to the form on our website, www.tbilpod.com. And once again, from right next door in Fort Worth, Texas, we'll finish with, from 1959, this is Ray Sharp and Linda Lou.
You never know what my baby's gonna put down. Everybody always tell me I've got the cutest little girl in town. I'm gonna marry that girl next Saturday night. Pick up for the rest of my life. From now on my roving days are through. And it's all because of that chick. Linda Lou, Linda Lou, Linda Lou, tell me, tell me, tell me, tell me, what are you gonna do? I had a real bad dream last night, honey. You said, you said, you said, you said that we were through.